The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Kurt Benrud with the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Sci-Fi. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi.
This is Fred Woodward, and I'm reading Subject AT-171 by Melissa Mead. "Let's take a walk while our porridge cools off," announced the largest of the three bears in a voice that carried through the clearing. All three bears left the cottage and settled in the blind to wait. The girl crept out of the woods soon after. "The poor thing's so thin," said the middle bear. Her larger colleague chuckled. "You'd be feeding every subject in the forest if you had your way, Mama Bear. I wish you'd stop calling me that." "Serves you right for calling me baby," said the smallest of the trio. "Whoa! What a crash! What's she doing? Wrecking the place?" They waited until everything fell silent before returning to the cottage, eyes and ears alert. "Subject tasted my porridge," the largest bear noted. "And mine, but not enough for much of a dose." "She ate mine all up," said the smallest bear in a tone of satisfaction. "I told you to add honey." "Now to find her," the largest bear grumbled. "She sat in my chair." "Tore the cushion on mine," said Mama. "The sedative must have taken effect." "I'll say my chair's smashed to bits. I'll bet she fell on it." "That must have been the crash we heard," said Mama Bear. "Any sign of her, Papa?" "Not in my bed, nor mine." "Here's our little culprit," said the third bear with a happy growl. "Sleeping like a cub. Between 5 and 8 years old, I'd guess. Mama, can you get the measurements without waking her up? And draw a blood sample. Watch." In short order, the golden-haired girl was weighed, measured, and tagged, and the blood sample drawn. They were implanting the tracker when someone knocked on the door. "Got another one?" said the fox on the doorstep. "Yep. Juvenile female. Looks healthy," said Baby Bear. "We're sending her to the Maplewoods Preserve." The fox shook his head. "I know it's none of my business, but I still think you should consider issuing hunting permits. These humans are overrunning the planet."
Hello, I'm Shadu Jackson. Hungry by Robert E. Stutz. This is an adult fairy tale with adult themes. Even in high summer, paths through these woods are difficult to find, let alone follow, overrun as they are with brambles and briars and bracken. But in summer, there is the sun above you to warm your head and the green of trees to cheer your heart. The winter is worse, of course, for winter lacks any kindness at all. Nonetheless, it is into the winter woods you go, following your brother, who has failed to protect you as he promised. Your parents have abandoned their children to the mercy of a force that has no mercy, to keep their hands clean of your blood, even as they fill their bellies with your portions, meager as those will be, whatever crumb they sup on. If you had the means, you would have your revenge on them both. But now you are hungry and tired, and your eyes begin to water at the thought of a warm bed or any bed. The night sounds terrify you, and every rustle in the bush is a wolf with meat on his mind. You will not escape a wolf's hunger. Your own cannot match his, or can it? A push through a tangle of dead bushes, and the tiny hut appears before you, lit up like a church. But no ordinary house this. No. Around the fence sit wax tapers at regular intervals. Their light is brighter than the candles you remember your mother lighting. But of course, She had only four. Skulls sit on the fence post. The gate is open, and the path through the snow leads to the dark brown house. The smell of it floods your nose, and you remember in happier times how your grandmother made bread at Christmas. The roof of the house is made of cake, the windows spun from sugar. An edible house, and certainly not ordinary. As you move closer, you see that the house squats on chicken legs, as if hatching an egg. You point at the legs and the skulls and murmur to your brother, who does not care for chickens, or eggs, or skulls, and who rushes forward to feast. You follow after, knowing that danger is but a breath away. You have heard stories, but you too are hungry. Your brother has thrust his face into the front of the house and has begun to chew and chew and chew. He does not stop, and you wonder if he remembers to breathe. Gently, you pull a bit of the doorframe and bring the bread to your lips. The taste is warm, fresh baked. The door swings open. A witch lives here. She is beautiful and sharp-edged, with hair the color of pomegranate seeds and eyes as pale as icicles. You know that her hunger, like yours, is terrible and insatiable. She will gobble you up. Those stories you know to be true. She is blind, but smells you and wastes no time in snatching into her house the both of you. Your brother she locks in a brass cage to fatten him up. You, she says, will be my maid and will learn what I have to teach you. The notion makes your stomach drop. Someone else to tell you what to do? All day long your brother eats and weeps. The witch has a magic cupboard that never empties. She teaches you the words to open and lock it, so you may pull whatever she needs from its depths. And such fine delicacies the witch concocts for your brother. Beluga caviar served on little triangles of toast, large bowls of borscht with heavy dollops of sour cream, large yeasty pierogi stuffed with sautéed cabbage, or mashed potatoes mixed with carefully diced green onions and dill, or chopped beef sautéed with onions and eggs, pork cotletti served with sauerkraut and baked turnips. She tops blini with all kinds of fruit preserves. Cranberry, raspberry, blueberry, blackberry, loganberry, huckleberry, mulberry, boysenberry, youngberry, olaliberry. Fried Sir Nicky comes to him garnished with honey and applesauce. All day long he eats and eats and eats, crying all the while, and you are given nothing to eat but bread crust and some beets left over from the borscht, which stain your teeth red. At the end of each day, the sightless witch asks to feel your brother's finger. She cannot see him to gauge how well he fattens, and she is wise not to reach into the cage. He offers a small bone he has found in the straw beneath him. She runs her own fingers along its smoothness, takes the tip of the bone into her mouth, and runs her tongue around it. "Not yet," she says, "not yet." Each night you undress the witch, and then yourself, and you crawl beneath the sheets with her. Her breath smells of ginger, her long hair moves across her back like honey, her skin is as white as sugar, and she tastes like wild strawberries, as warm and tart as summer when you feast below. The daily routine seems endless to you, although it is not entirely unpleasant. The witch keeps you warm if not full. You begin to wonder if you should tell the blind witch how your brother deceives her because his crying annoys you and he never offers to share any of his food with you. Instead, you stop telling him that all will be well. At last, and long in coming, the witch decides that as skinny as your brother remains, he will still be eaten. She has a large oven, large enough to fit two snugly enough, and bake them through and through. You understand what she has planned for you now, and somehow you are not surprised to find yourself shoving her into the oven and locking the door. You saved yourself and your brother, but it has not made you happy. It has not given you joy. You run outside to escape her screams, which do not last long. The wind is cold and damp, and you feel it seep into your bones, eating up the warmth the witch left behind. You eat the witch in many ways, with sour cream and dill, with apricot compote, with sliced turnips and parsnips sprinkled with rosemary. You feed some of the witch to your brother, whom you've left in the cage, and who continues to cry every day. He has grown quite fat, and there is nothing, after all, wrong with your eyes.
Five Minutes by Connor Powers Smith. Sasha took what looked to be the third or fourth to last sip of her Jack and Coke, still flirting with the idea of a second round. This was pure fantasy, she knew. After a shift and a half at the hospital, she was too tired to linger in the little roadside bar, neat and quiet though it was. And she didn't want her breath to get too boozy, in case the girls woke up when she snuck in for their belated goodnight kisses. Someone, a man, she thought, slid onto the stool to her left. The bells over the door hadn't jingled, which meant the man hadn't just come in, but had probably been one of the anonymous heads turned away from her toward the baseball game on the TV mounted above the far end of the bar, which in turn meant his change of position likely had something to do with her. She kept her gaze casually but resolutely on the shelves of bottles behind the bar. She was definitely too tired for this. Most men were perfectly capable of understanding signals, but some chose not to. Apparently, this was one of those, because he said, Hey, can I buy you a drink? She turned, and with a smile whose only message was its own purely polite nature. The man was extremely plain. She'd thought that adjective was reserved for women, but there was really no other word for him. He seemed unduly nervous, as though he were approaching some unattainable stunner, rather than a moderately attractive 34-year-old single mother. He looked at least 10 years younger than her. "Thanks, no," she said. "Something to eat?" "No." She finished her drink in one quick gulp, not bothering to chew a couple of half-melted chunks of ice that slid down the glass and clinked wetly against her upper lip. "Thanks. Then listen. Let me tell you something about myself." She smiled again. Would this be about his fabulous yacht, his adventures as a war hero, or would he jump right to his penis size? "I can see the future," he said. "Oh, God." She began gathering her coat and purse from the stool to her right. "No, I can." "Well, congratulations. Good night." She looked at him again and stopped. He wasn't looking at her, but down at the bar. His hands were clenched. Had there been a hint of aggression in those tight little fists, she would have walked away without hesitation. But he wasn't trying to throttle whatever insubstantial presence his hands were closed around. He was trying to hold on to something, a rope that was unraveling by the second, or the last two handfuls of water on earth. She sighed. Sometimes she was too nice for her own good. "Okay, who's going to win the Super Bowl?" His head shot up. For a moment, he was too pathetically relieved to speak. Finally, his mouth opened in a small, self-deprecating smile, and he said, "Couldn't tell you." "Oh," Sasha said, feeling foolish for having indulged him. "That's not for, like, 6 months." "That's too far?" "Way, I can only do 5 minutes." She smiled back at him, waiting for the punchline. Apparently, more was required from her, the straight man. She offered. "5 minutes, huh?" "About. It's more like 4 minutes, 40-something seconds. 5 minutes just sounds better." "Uh-huh." "It's not as useful as you'd think. I mean, it's good for some stuff. You can do all right at the track with it, but I don't know. Those places are depressing." "Vegas?" "Yeah, that's true. I haven't tried it." "You can see the future, and you haven't been to Vegas." "I know. I went to Atlantic City one time. I'm from Jersey." "Oh, what are you doing in Ohio?" "Just driving around, kind of wandering."
But yeah, I felt like I had to try it at least once, the casino gimmick. I did okay. Just okay? Yeah, just okay. Now that he'd gotten the conversation he'd sought, the man seemed distracted. His eyes roamed around the bar, paying special attention to the main door and the side door that led out onto the deck. Like I said, it's not as useful as you'd think. I tried it with poker, which was stupid. You never see anybody's hand, you know. It's not that big of an advantage. And then most games, blackjack, roulette, all that take less than 5 minutes, per hand or per spin or whatever. It's hard to take time out. I wouldn't want to make a living like that anyway. It seems like you should be able to do something better with it. You going to become a superhero? Yeah, 5 minute man. That doesn't sound too good, huh? Yeah. I did try to do something with it. I got a police scanner and I looked ahead while I was listening to it. That's how it works. Whatever I'm doing, the time, 5 minutes later I mean, that's what I see when I look ahead. Uh-huh. So when something popped up on the scanner, I called it in. 5 minutes ahead of time, you know? Well, 4 minutes, 40-something. Right. But it didn't really work. Stuff gets on the scanner because someone calls it in, and it doesn't get on right away. So I was really shaving off maybe a couple minutes, calling in, say, 2 or 3 minutes before the call would have come in anyway. For most stuff, that's not going to make a big difference. And then, well, they didn't like it either. They? Yeah, the cops. As he explained, his eyes continued to move, rarely encountering Sasha's. She caught several clandestine glances at his watch. They caller ID that stuff. A couple of times I think they did get there in time to scare off whoever it was. You know, someone reports a guy breaking into his house and the cops get there and no guy. They're not big fans of that. It happens a few times from the same number, and they don't have a lot of patience for that. They swung by one day and explained all this. I didn't have the scanner out at the time, thank Christ. That really would have made me look like some kind of false tip fetishist. But yeah, it turns out there are a number of very sensible laws about not making false police calls, state, federal, and local. I was strongly encouraged to, you know, not to do that. So I stopped, which is fine. The whole thing was pretty boring. Huh. Well, it was nice meeting you. I'm going to hit the road. As she'd thought, the man's full attention snapped back to her. Wouldn't you want to stay for, like... He glanced down at his watch again, not bothering to hide it this time. Just another minute or two? Honestly, no offense. I was leaving anyway. No, I thought, that's... Listen, can I tell you something that happened to me tonight? I really am tired. Or could I show you? It'd just take a minute. You want to go out on the deck? I don't smoke. No, me neither. But it's a nice night. She looked through the glass panels in the side door, not to check on the weather, but to see if there were anyone else out there. She saw a few human shapes, one small group of several couples. She shrugged, reached for her things. As he led the way outside, he said, I was watching the game. You like baseball? Not really. Well, Biondi was pitching pretty well until the sixth, but then he loaded the bases. 2 walks and an infield single. Or no, a walk, then the hit. Then he beaned somebody. All with one out. Anyway, I wanted to see if he'd get out of it, or if Marshall was going to bring in a reliever. If it was Suarez, you would have heard me screaming at the TV before it happened. I don't know why he keeps going to him in tight spots. He's a mop-up guy at best. The night was clear and cool. Most of the deck lay in shadow, lit only by a few strings of Christmas lights and the bug lights above the door. There was a quiet murmur of conversation from the others. One group, it looked like, one woman and 3 men, positioned at the far end of the deck where the shadows were thickest. Only the bar's narrow parking lot separated the deck from the highway. The lot opened not onto the highway, but onto a side street a few dozen feet to the left of the deck, which met the highway beneath a set of traffic lights. When she realized the man had stopped talking, she glanced over and saw him leaning out over the deck's rail, craning his neck to the left to see as far along the highway as he could. "Should be any time now," he said. "Maybe this one?" Sasha heard the sound of an engine off to the left. As she watched, a pair of headlights appeared. "No," the man said. "Maybe." "No, too low." The headlights slowed as they neared the intersection where the light was red for the highway, green for the side street. The car was still a few dozen feet short of the intersection when the light changed. The headlights picked up speed and the car itself, a blue or green sedan, was visible for a second or two as it passed. Sasha said, "How about now?" Another car was approaching from the left. The man had turned away from the highway, leaning his back against the rail instead of his hands and stomach. He looked over his shoulder at the traffic lights, green for the highway, red for the side street, and said, "No, not yet." A few seconds later, something with higher lights than the last car came through, a black or dark blue pickup truck. Sasha saw it as it passed. After a few more seconds, the man glanced again at the light, which had just changed, giving the green to the side street. He turned, not leaning over the rail now, but watching the highway intently. "I think now," he said. He looked at his watch. "Yeah, this time." Another engine was on the highway, racing so loud and fast that Sasha couldn't immediately tell which direction it was coming from. But the lights appeared on the left, growing rapidly in size and brightness. Sasha didn't have time to judge the moment at which the vehicle should have begun braking in order to stop at the red light until the moment had come and gone. The SUV streaked through the intersection without slowing and passed the bar in a bulky green blur. A moment later, it was gone. There were dark chuckles from the men of the other group, a few low, angry words from the woman, different ways of expressing the same reaction. Sasha knew. The evil little shock of fear that buzzed its way up her spine and into her shoulders, where it spread out to form a pair of tingling internal wings. She looked at the man who'd turned away from the highway to stare at her. She said, "That was it?" He nodded. A big, loose grin was taking over the lower half of his face. "Okay." She didn't want to tell him how unconvinced she was. She thought you could stake out any moderately busy intersection in the country for maybe an hour and see someone do something monumentally unacceptable. The timing had worked out for him, but then he'd been vague about what they were looking for. If someone had driven by in a classic car or tried to enter the parking lot directly from the highway and bumped over the high curve, he probably would have pointed to that as proof. She was trying to think of a way to disengage without hurting the man's feelings when he surprised her by saying, "Well, nice meeting you. Have a good night." He was still grinning as he turned away and moved toward the door. "Hold on," Sasha said. "I don't get it." He turned and moved back toward her. "What? Why did you want me to see that?" "I didn't necessarily. It was just the only thing I could think of. You were leaving." "So? Now you're leaving." "Yeah, it's fine now." "What's fine?" "I don't know if I should tell you," he spoke softly. She could hear him perfectly well because he was very close and leaning even closer. He seemed to consider this a secret. He smelled as plain as he looked. Faded deodorant, fading beer. His grin was gone. "You drive a red Civic, right? And you live," he gestured up the side street, past the intersection, "somewhere in that direction." Another shiver ran up her spine. Not the last of the night, not even close. He saw her reaction and hurried on. "I wanted to check the game, so I looked ahead. But I wasn't looking at the TV. I mean, 5 minutes later, I was outside with everybody else." "Out here?" He shook his head and then cocked it toward the parking lot. "Out there, with everybody else." She glanced in that direction, unwilling to take her eyes from the man for any longer than necessary. "There's nobody out there," she said. "But there were. There would have been." He brought his voice still lower, leaned in still closer. "Are you one of those people who takes their time leaving a place? You know, savor the last few sips, chat with the bartender, let him half convince you to have another drink before finally deciding not to hit the bathroom, I don't know, check your makeup or whatever?" "Why?" "It might have taken you something like 5 minutes to get out of here, originally. To get to your car, to pull out on the street, head through the intersection, totally calm since you had the green, since any goddamn maniac on the highway would have seen a big red light glaring right in his stupid goddamn face. His anger subsided as quickly as it had arisen, and he grew hesitant, almost embarrassed, as one might be when speaking about a deceased stranger to one of the stranger's loved ones, or somehow to the stranger herself. "It's a good thing there aren't that many people in here," he said. "I was pretty sure it was you. There's no exit off the deck, and you were the only woman inside. I mean, I was pretty sure, but I had to keep an eye out. It was, you couldn't really tell, after. She was, it was bad?" In the dim light, his Adam's apple was no more than the spongy suggestion of a distinct shadow. But she thought she saw it bob up towards his chin and stick there as he tried and failed to swallow. That was all the answer she got. Sasha said, "I don't..." "It's okay," he said, beginning to move toward the door. "You don't have to believe me. I'm sorry I bugged you." He turned, walked briskly to the door, swung it open, and disappeared into the bar, all before Sasha could come up with anything to say. She was still staring out into the night a minute or two later when she saw him moving across the parking lot, resolutely not looking at her. She shouted, "Hey!" He turned and took the few steps necessary to put him beside the deck. Sasha said, "How are they doing?" "Who?" "The... whoever you root for." "Oh, the Mets. The Reds are taking Suarez to task. He's crashing and burning." In the dim light, he appeared to wince. "Sorry." She smiled, realizing all at once how good it felt to be able to do that, to be able to stand on the deck in the cool night air, having a casual conversation. "That's okay. I'm sorry they're losing." He shrugged. "It's only the seventh. Still plenty of baseball left to play." There followed perhaps 5 seconds of silence, and Sasha thought the man was on the verge of leaving when she forced out, "Thanks." "Thank you." Had he gone back into the bar, or asked for her number, or offered to drive her home, the delicate structure of her belief would have puffed out of existence, like a spider web put to a flame. Instead, his big, loose grin returned. He wasn't so plain when he did that. And he turned, raised one arm in a high, slow wave, and walked off across the parking lot to his car. Out on the street, he waited several seconds at the intersection, though he had the green. Then he turned right and disappeared up the highway.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrud, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.